Okay, guys, let's jump right in. The Apostle Paul spoke at Mars Hill. Jesus taught in the temple. Peter addressed thousands in the open air. So how would Jesus use the platform of blogging to proclaim the good news of the kingdom? Starting with you, Trevin.
I put my microphone down just so you wouldn't call me first. I think it's easier for me to talk about what Paul might do than what Jesus would do with platform building, because it seems to me that Paul wanted to utilize all sorts of methods, anything that that he could possibly do to get the message of the gospel about Jesus out to as many people as possible. And so for me, why it's easier to think of Paul and not Jesus, not that I'm dodging that question, is because Jesus's platform building is necessarily all about himself, right? Paul's building of platforms and using platforms is all about how can we point people to him. So I don't think that what would Jesus do fits in our context, because if we're going to be just like Jesus, then we would be walking around talking as if we're God.
Is there something fundamentally different about, say, teaching in the temple, though, for Jesus and, say, blogging today? I mean, of course, there's a religious function there in Jesus coming himself as the temple to fulfill and to move on from that temple in his own body. But is there something different in that teaching function of the church and what it means to build a platform today to be able to blog, Denny?
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking of Jesus in Luke 4. I mean, he just went to the synagogue and he stood up and he read from the scroll. He went to where he knew people were going to be, and he wasn't afraid to talk. He showed up at the temple. And of course, it's different because you think of Judaism as kind of a come-see religion. All of those venues had special significance. And I don't want to compare blogging platforms to say that it has some kind of special religious significance. But nevertheless, the temple, the synagogue, was a center of Israel's religious and public life. And he went there, and he spoke, and he turned over tables there, and he confronted false teachers. So, if you can call that a platform, if you can see an implication for this platform, I think that's legitimate.
Joe, well, I mean, go back to Mars Hill, for example. I mean, are there significant differences or any lessons that we can learn from, say, Paul's interaction in a place like the Areopagus?
In terms of blogging?
Sure, that's why we're here.
Well, I mean, I think blogging has always been, for me, personal and public, right? It's been an exploration of what I believe the scripture says and what that has not just meant for me, but what it necessarily should mean for everybody. And that's what Paul's doing there. I think some of the takeaways include what are commonly known, right? Like, he was aware of this culture, and he knew how to step into it and speak words that were not just complimentary, but in conflict with them, so he could draw these lines of differentiation and point them to what they were lacking. I think there's a part of that would work with blogging. I think bloggers that have something to say on their platforms are not just saying things that require yes and amen, but things that arouse suspicion, distrust, or anger even.
So in terms of platform, Justin, in terms of platform in blogging, the conflict that a lot of us feel in promoting ourselves and what that looks like, going back to Trevin's initial piece about promoting ourselves versus promoting Jesus, do you see other biblical principles at play that can guide us clearly in what is acceptable and what is not acceptable as far as platform building for bloggers?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, we have to be guided by fundamental principles. So when we think of something, blogging is relatively new in church history with the technology. But we can't start too far downstream. I think we have to go back to first principles. I mean, just big, basic ideas that we have to be ultimately about the glory of God and not the glory of man. So there's specific things that get confusing, get muddled, are gray areas. But I think we have to keep in mind the black and white things, that we want to pursue humility and not to be prideful. We don't want to fear man. We want to be savvy and we want to be innocent. We want to be courageous without being cantankerous. Those sort of first principles, I think if we focus on implications, results, again, more downstream. We forget the big principles that we need to keep in mind. And I think if we focus more of our attention there, some of the gray areas will get a little bit easier for us.
Well, Tim, let's talk about the gray areas then. Does the contemporary medium of blogging pose challenges that are difficult for us to address using the Bible? Or how do we understand just the unique challenges posed by blogging and platform building? I mean, I'm just trying to think of when Paul, like, would Paul have faced this same conflict when he was writing a letter to a church? Would he have faced the same conflict? Of course, he's in an apostolic role. A blogger is anybody who decides to start an account on WordPress.
Yeah, I think in the church in Corinth, I mean, they were the super apostles and those who wanted to promote themselves and their position and try to gain influence over the church. And Paul says, I came to you in weakness and much trembling. In one case in 1 Corinthians 2, and I think about 2 Corinthians 4, where Paul says, we preach not ourselves, but Christ Jesus as Lord. And so he's always, of course, pointing away to Christ and him crucified. And so that was a case that was very worldly in that sense, and Paul had a polemic against that. But at the same time, in the church of Corinth, I see Paul saying, I make it my aim to please him. I do all things for the sake of the gospel. And so I think that there is a healthy ambition and a desire to want to be influential. Paul wanted to be an influential for the cause of the gospel. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to be influential and being ambitious, but there is a Philippians 2, do nothing from selfish ambition or vain conceit, that is a sinful ambition. So we don't need to throw ambition out altogether and say that it's wrong to desire to have a platform for the good of the gospel. And I think Paul addressed that in several cases in relation to the church. And in our case, I think with blogging is that we are in a digital world, and that world is increasing all the more, and more people are living their lives that way. And how do we represent Christ, honor the gospel, live in accountable relationships so that what we say, you know, Jesus says every idle word you'll give an account for. Those words matter. And so having an environment where you're blogging, not someone in a basement by yourself just trying to disagree with everybody, but seeking to legitimately make a difference for the cause of Christ, I think is a commendable thing.
Jessica, let me come back to you on this next question. I think platform is another way of saying, what is your basis of credibility for speaking on a certain topic or for claiming that I have a teaching gift that's meant not just to be shared with my family, with my children, my local church, but potentially, under God's providence, much wider. How does a writer know that he or she has that gifting, or even has that should be speaking out on those topics? I think it's important to come back and remember, maybe a lot of us, I mean, I probably tend too far on the ambition side of things. I don't remember having a lot of scruples about me speaking up at young ages. I probably should have. I know I should have had more of those scruples. But I talk to other people who I can see them with teaching gifts, and I think you really should be writing. The church could really benefit from your work. And those people say, oh, I'm not really sure. That kind of feels like I'm claiming something that doesn't belong to me. Who's to say that I have something that other people need to hear? So we can come from different perspectives. Justin, how does somebody know that they should pursue that platform for wider ministry?
Well, I don't think there's any quick, easy checklist. I think one of the most important things is that the person is seeking the Lord in prayer, in all of life, seeking to steward the gifts that he's given, and asking that where there may be strengths that the Lord would increase those gifts. I mean, you are a good writer, and you were a good writer coming out of college. You're a better writer now than you were back then. So you can't make a final determination of your giftings just based on your early steps out of the gate. But I think being involved in a local church community where there's true accountability, where there's true pastoral leadership is really crucial. I think we need, in terms of vocation, to recover more of the Puritan ideal, where it was less individualistic, less somebody just goes in the prayer closet, determines their calling, and comes out, and they, you know, they're ready for their task. But submitting to the wisdom of the church, to others, for other people to recognize giftings, to confirm or to deny. We may have ideas of, I have this desire in a certain direction, and other people, nobody's resonating with your teaching. I mean, you may love teaching Sunday school and nobody may come and nobody is helped. But on the opposite end, people get affirmation and they get encouragement and people are being helped by it. So I think all those kind of stir into the mix. There's an interesting dynamic here with respect to blogging in particular, because blogging is, the technology is an egalitarian format. I'm not talking about roles of men and women, but it's a leveling format so that you can spend 8 hours on a blog post and the first person who responds, who maybe hasn't even read the whole thing, can make some comment about how ridiculous this is, and I can't believe you're saying that, and I'm very hurt by that. And that's the first comment. So you've got your blog post, that's the first comment. They're on the same level, they're not in different colors. One doesn't say this is more authoritative or this is more helpful than the other. So there's an egalitarian component to the technology, but there's also a meritocracy element to it, that the people who are good at it tend to get read the most. And good doesn't, I'm not using that in the absolute sense of the most godly or the most helpful, but those who can attract traffic, those who can attract readers tend to get read more often. So you've got both of those playing into the process.
Trevin, let me ask, this is for both you and Justin. Both of you blog on the platform of the Gospel Coalition, whereas Joe and Danny and Timmy are independent. What difference does it make for your platform in how you write that it's under the Gospel Coalition banner?
I mean, for me, I think I've been over there for, I guess, it's a little more than 2 years now. It's been interesting to watch how blogs have evolved and how people have begun solidifying into these networks and neighborhoods, so to speak. For me, I guess what the positive side is being at TGC, I think, gives just an extra layer of credibility in the sense that there's some sort of institutional connection there. Even though I'm not on the TGC council or anything like that, just being connected visibly in that way, I think, adds a layer of credibility. It can also, the negative side of that is that it can also be seen as somewhat of a sacrifice of your independence, so that if you don't speak to something, people might assume, oh, that's because, you know, the behind the doors scenes of TGC have all gotten together and said they're not going to talk, which usually is not true. But that's it can lead that, oh, if Trevin were independent, he would be speaking to this, or he would, and it adds this level of credibility. But then the downside is, I think sometimes people think that everyone gets together and coordinates what they're going to blog on or what's going to be said, when it's really much more independent than that. So for me, that's been both the downside and the upside, and it's somewhat of a trade-off.
Do you get edited at TGC? I'm just curious.
Edited as in someone, I have to send my stuff to someone else before I publish? No. No, I send out some stuff occasionally if it's something I think might be controversial that I want to get other people's eyes on. I do that with friends at Lifeway, friends at TGC, just depending on what the subject is, but no one edits.
Like your Frozen post?
Let it go, let it go, let it go.
Talk about your friends at Lifeway.
Yeah. That one did not get edited until after the fact.
Good, Justin.
I just had a third element. For me, there's a level of accountability. I mean, my primary spheres of accountability are church, fellow elders, family, friends. But for me, blogging under the banner of TGC is just a constant reminder that I'm not a lone ranger out on my own. And so if I do mess up, say something, there are enough people that despise TGC that if they're going to criticize, even though I'm not a council member, they'll say, you know, TGC blogger, if they want to make it negative. So just for me to keep in mind, D.A. Carson and Tim Keller and those guys, their reputation to some degree, and maybe a long degree, you know, it is bound up with what I'm saying, so that if I put my foot in my mouth or if I respond in an unrighteous way, that reflects poorly not only on myself but upon a wider coalition. So I found that helpful.
I want to come back to this, but I want to go to Denny and ask about what that looks like independently, because you're an independent blogger, but then again, you represent your church, you represent the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and Boyce College in particular. So what does that platform look like, being independent?
Well, you just said it. I don't feel independent. Yeah. I pay for it and I control it, but my goodness, I'm a pastor at a church. I have an accountability to the other pastors there, to my congregation. The things I write about, I'm constantly thinking about, how's this going to affect Dr. Moeller, my boss? How's this going to affect the way that people, his work in the convention? And I'll be honest, I work not to get out in front of him. I want him to be the spokesman for our school. And so I try to allow that. So I don't feel like I'm independent in that sense. I feel accountable to all kinds of groups.
Joe, what does that look like in your life as lead pastor in a church?
Yeah, well, when I started blogging, none of the people at church read my blog. It was most of them didn't know I was blogging at all. So there wasn't a lot of accountability built in. But these days, a lot of people from the church do read the blog. Of course, the elders are aware, and one of our pastors, who we've brought a few pastors down today, Brian Malcolm, he's on there with me and sees a lot of things. So yeah, there's definitely a sense of accountability. And the thing is, I think for all of us, everybody has a platform, whether you're a mother or a father or a blogger or a teacher. Like, everybody has a platform from which they speak. It could be just a local guy that goes down to the cigar shop and he hangs out with his friends, and that's his platform. Everybody has a platform. It's how you steward it. And so in my case, there are two things that keep me more careful with what I say these days, anyways. And one is the church that the Lord has allowed me to serve and be a part of, because I want what I say to be helpful for them primarily before anybody else. And then I don't want to embarrass Jesus or myself. So I have enough pride in me still. Like, I don't like looking really stupid. So if I'm just honest, there are multiple layers of things that kind of restrain me. I don't have the benefit of being a part of a larger group that has a lot of respect or that I respect. Thank you, Denny. He respects me.
He said that off microphone.
Yeah, no, it was
just
not going to be on the thing. No, I saw
clear.
How it was. Like,
I respect
you. Is that on tape?
But those things work together for me. It's relatively, I think, comfortable at this stage with the accountability layers that I have.
Tim, related to these issues, how have you seen the debates about platform and just the opportunities change over the years, even just since Band of Bloggers has come along?
Well, I think the big thing has been how social media, particularly Facebook and Twitter, have played into that. It's been great to see guys like Joe and Trevin, who I knew as friends and bloggers before they became authors, how blogging created a platform, whether they asked for it or not, for people to see that they're really good writers and they're writing on important topics, and that publishers are seeing that and giving them the opportunity to write books that can be very beneficial to the evangelical larger community. And so that has been, a process that's happened. But at the same time, I have some concerns, because on the flip side, that's the positive side. On the negative side is I do have friends who are wanting to write and publish or self-publish or publishing through a publishing company, where their company or that themselves are really trying to push a book, and so I'll get a direct message from someone and say, hey, I'm putting this tweet up, can you retweet it today? Or I'm writing this blog post, can you plug it or this or that? And I'm happy to do that. But if my relationship with those friends only exists as I'm an amplifier to their platform, I really feel like that my value to them as a brother in Christ gets diminished. Because I'm just more of a spotlight than I am someone to partner with in ministry. And so I've seen both sides of that. I really want to be an encouragement to those who are wanting to do that. But more than that, I value the people who I get a chance to hug their necks and say, let me hear about your family. Tell me about your ministry. Tell me about your church. And if God gives us the opportunity to write or publish a book or have a blog that people read it, that's great. But more than that, it's seeing what is God doing in us.
Justin, tell us a little bit more about the platform building partnership that Crossway has undertaken with the Gospel Coalition?
In terms of what we're specifically doing together?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a good relationship with, I'm speaking with my Crossway hat on, good relationship with the Gospel Coalition, in particular partnering on a women's initiative, publishing the conference books that are coming out, and then working with Gloria Furman, whose husband Dave is here, and Kathleen Nielsen to do books specifically by women and for women. That's always been just an inherent limitation for me as a man. I can see good women writers out there, but I don't intuitively know the market, can't develop writers the same way that Gloria and Kathleen can. And also working with Gospel Coalition and Bethany Jenkins on a vocation work and theology line to produce a steady stream of books that really try to come at the angle of work and vocation from a new perspective. Not the new perspective on Paul, but a new faithful perspective. I do think the explosion of interest by and for women is a really interesting development. I think probably 5 years ago, perhaps those of us up here were not as well aware of how it's mainly guys writing for guys. I mean, we hope everybody reads our stuff, but what's happened at Christianity Today with the hermeneutics blog, which I don't think CT even saw being that successful, has been wildly successful. And so I think we really need to be winsome and strategic in trying to reach women with really helpful biblical resources and theology.
And part of what we recognize, we're here to talk about platform. It's, again, it's your credibility to speak to other people. It's what you'd explain to them in a sentence of why they should care. And so say you're a pastor or you're a professor, that's easy. You should care because I'm the pastor of a church. I'm a professor. I'm an expert on this. Well, in complementarian circles, that's a different question, especially for women, because they're most likely not going to be professors, and they certainly won't be pastors in that case. So how does a woman in that case build a platform if she has other things to say? Well, blogging is one way to do that. So what we've decided to do is help use the Gospel Coalition platform to help give those women an opportunity to be more widely read so that then the Crossway can publish books from them. And we're doing that also with Faith and Work, because again, Christian publishers are good at publishing pastors and academics, but not other people who are gaining their credibility, say, among other lawyers, for example.
Yeah, and I'd spotlight Gloria as such a great example. Had anybody heard of her 3 years ago? I mean, her personal friends did, but she just showed that she could write, and she utilized the platform not in a self-promoting way, but in a way to pump out good content. And when you put out good content, people want to read more of it. So that, to me, is a great win-win situation.
Yeah, just one last thing related to the Gospel Coalition. If you're wondering how, when you're getting published, what's my credibility, what's my platform, who's going to care? Interestingly, almost none of our best read articles, except for, say, what our regular bloggers like Trevin and Justin do, it's almost always people who are not very well known with huge platforms on their own. It's not Tim Keller or Don Carson or John Piper that usually get the most reads. So it's one thing we've tried to do is to incorporate a lot of other newer, younger writers who have something important to say and bring them together to be able to make the ministry itself a platform to feature good work. Okay, I'm going to transition from that to asking a personal question. What platform building endeavor do you hate when someone else does it, but do it yourself? Joe, I'm asking you.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Maybe there isn't one, but maybe there is.
I'm conflicted over platform building in general. When I started blogging, it wasn't to build a platform. We didn't talk about that back then. In 05, it was, I want to think out loud and talk to other people. That's all that it was. Comments were really big. The social media thing wasn't big. So it wasn't about trying to become anything. That wasn't on the radar. But if you have something to say and you believe it's worth hearing, then you need to pay attention to the platform. You know, you have to say, like, well, how can I build this and expand this with the right safeguards, with the right motives? You have to check yourself. So I guess the thing that concerns me overall is when platform building becomes about the personality more than about either the issue that you want to address, be it theology or just personal life, being a father or a mother or whatever. When the personality becomes dominant, and it's the same in churches, we see this happening in churches as well. So, but when the personality takes over and it becomes about him or her and the brand rather than what's going on, I get quickly uncomfortable with that.
Well, that's, I can definitely say as somebody who edits a lot of bloggers that if you, and I've said this before at events like this, but if you write to write because God's gifted you that way, you have a chance of having a platform that God can use for his glory. If you write to get a platform, it's going to fall apart. It's a house built on sand. It's not going to happen. So maybe you're talking about the early days. People wrote because they wrote. They had something to say. They wanted to be able to share it, as opposed to thinking that it was automatically going to lead to book deals, conference speaking, and things like that. Go ahead,
Tim. Yeah, I was going to say, along those lines, I don't know if, Justin, this is something that you can answer, but I have had friends who have been given the opportunity to write book-length projects, but are told that in order for this book to be accepted, you're going to have to start blogging. And unless you're blogging on a regular basis, so the motivation for their blogging is in part because of the book that they want to write. And so therefore, the motivation of writing just for the sake of writing because they enjoy it and because of the community that's behind it, it's not the primary motivation, at least from the start of it. And is that an issue that right now that's happening with publishing companies where the need to write, the need to have a, tweet five times a day, or have a Facebook post up and that sort of thing? A temptation to follow through on?
I think that's a good question. I always add whenever I talk about, state of publishing, I've only worked for one publisher, so I really am limited in my perspective because I kind of know what Crossway does or what we expect, and it's difficult for me to know with others, what's happening elsewhere. I think for us, I don't know that we specifically ask somebody, you need to start blogging, but I have told people, they may pitch an idea to me for a book, and if they don't have any sort of presence, it's very difficult, and you all know this just from walking into a bookstore. You look at a book, sometimes the mere title itself is compelling enough that you would be willing to spend $15, $20, $25, but usually you're going to look on the back and see, do you recognize any of the names on the back? Not because, if a celebrity endorsed this, then that I'm laying down the $20, but I trust that person. I don't know who this guy is, but if that person is really enthusiastic, or you may not know that person that well, but you've read something that they've written. So if somebody's not ever known for writing on a certain topic, I'll encourage them, try writing something for the Gospel Coalition. And that can actually be an incentive for us if Person X decides to pitch an article to Colin. It goes on the Gospel Coalition or Desiring God or whatever other platform, and it's shared 10,000 times. That's something that's going to make a publishing committee sit up and take notice that, there is some resonance here, versus the other situation is you haven't blogged on this, your ideas aren't out there, you're not well known. I think people have to remember that every publishing contract is essentially entering into some relationship of risk. The publisher is taking on risk. They're taking on financial risk or taking on a risk to their reputation because there's no guarantee that any book is going to sell. If your name's John Piper, your risk is really, really small. But if you're somebody who hasn't written anywhere on this and you're not known, that risk for the publisher becomes that much bigger. So some of what It sounds too crass just to say the publisher is trying to minimize risk, but that's part of the process. So get some ideas out there. Let's see if you can write. Let's see if it resonates. If you publish something and nobody reads it, nobody retweets it, that may be an indication it's just not the right time, or you didn't pitch it at the right level, or other aspects.
That's very helpful. Trevin, looking back on your last 10 years, do you feel like your self-promotion has changed?
I don't know. I haven't given that much thought to what I used to do or what I do now. Knowing though, now having been both an author and also in publishing, I know that that side of minimizing risk is a big key factor. And so it helps me understand why authors are so apt to use the platform that they have to talk about their own books. Because you realize this is not just about me, right? Because if I'm an author and a publisher has entered into that relationship of risk and has said the publisher is somewhat counting on you using your platform to help promote your resources because there's financials at stake. And so I guess if anything has changed for me, it's been having been on the author side and on the publisher side, I realize why it happens and why it's necessary for authors to talk about their own resources and to make sure that people that are following on Twitter or Facebook or blogging or whatnot understand that those resources are available. It doesn't necessarily make it easier from the author standpoint to do that. But at the same time, I'm thinking as an author, okay, I want to steward well the platform that I've been given. I want to also steward well the relationships with the publishers that I've been given. And I want to steward the truth is, I mean, if you write on something, you believe in what you've written about, right? And there's so many more people involved that I'd say, you know, I retweet stuff about when I see people excited about Gospel Project all the time. And I don't think of that as self-promotion for me at all, because if I were to list all of the people who were involved, all of the teams, all of the people whose names are not front and center associated with the Gospel Project, it's a massive team of people and writers and designers and people that work on this great resource. And I am as thrilled about it as I have been about anything that's come out in a long time. So I'm going to make, I don't look at that as, oh, that's, you know, necessarily going to pump up me. I look at that like I'm going to go out there and I'm excited about this and I want the team to know I'm excited about it, and I want people to recognize that those resources are available.
Yeah. Interesting. I often feel the same way about the Gospel Coalition as opposed to personally. I'm not sure why that is, but it feels like with this Gospel Coalition, even if I'm like responsible for it, it's still reflecting on what God's doing through a lot of different people, and I'm celebrating that partnership in celebrating what God's doing as opposed to with me. It somehow feels different. Well, I'm getting everybody on the record here. Retweeting compliments to you, good or bad, or acceptable or unacceptable, I'll put it that way.
Sinful.
Okay, sinful. He's starting out sinful. Do you want to explain that, or do you want to just go through? You kind of set it up for everyone else.
Yeah, I think I'd have a hard time coming up with a good argument that it is not sin to highlight a compliment that somebody says about you individually, even to do a backslash and say thanks. I don't.
Justin Taylor coming in strong, folks. Trevin, you're next.
But I would distinguish that from Trevin retweeting a compliment for Gospel Project. You're retweeting something from the Gospel Coalition, mm-hmm. which is a group effort. I think if you do it about yourself, I think it's very difficult to make a biblical argument that is pleasing to the
Lord.
Would
you favorite it or reply to it?
I reply to compliments. Because it doesn't go out to everybody, and it's just a way of saying thanks, but nobody knows what that compliment is until they do a little more work. Okay. So maybe that's a gray area, but I do think retweeting compliments is...
sinful. I'm not letting you off the hook.
At least borderline sinful.
Sinful, he said.
Usually sinful.
Sinful. Okay. Again, that's why we're asking. Trevin?
Retweet that if you think about it.
I'm going to... Retweeting a compliment that's directed directly to you is definitely, I mean, I don't want to go as far as Justin. I would make a distinction between that and complimentary of a resource that you're excited about. But because part of it, like I just this conversation about platforming, like, I mean, I was just talking with the guys this morning about last night a prominent pastor retweeted a picture of a group of guys who were studying his book, and they had tweeted him. They were excited about studying his book, and he retweeted it out. And my first response was, you know, I'm awesome for that path. Like, I felt like I'm a friend of the guy I'm following because he's excited that the group is excited, it's the kind of thing I would go home and I'd text Green. Oh, guess what? So and so said this. Look, this group is doing the book. Like, and you share that with your friends, right? You kind of celebrate, and it's not necessarily a, you know, wow, look at me. It's a, I'm excited about this resource. I'm excited that they're excited, and that kind of a thing. So then I started thinking, is that a humble brag? Or is that, like, the whole platform conversation, I want us to be careful that we don't read our own cynical, suspicious, millennial eyes onto everything to where we're necessarily seeing nefarious motives behind retweeting and how we do things.
But don't you think we have to be cognizant of how tempting the medium is to be that's the whole thing. It sets up. I'm just not clear how you can be John the Baptist decreasing that Christ may increase.
Well, it makes it easier if you actually take it away from the electronic realm and just imagine standing up at your pulpit and just holding up a placard of a compliment somebody wrote for you. Just like, so everybody can see it.
Yeah.
I mean, that looks ridiculous. That becomes a little bit more objectively black and white.
Okay, well, I would say that's sinful.
Okay, Joe Thorne, on the record, acceptable, unacceptable, or sinful?
I'm compliments through Twitter. I don't understand what that is. I don't think I've.
That was a humble brag.
Interestingly,
Joe has never received a compliment.
I don't know what that. Yeah, don't retweet. No, listen. I think it's sinful. I think it's just dumb. I mean, I think you just look bad when you do it. If you're not convicted that it is sin, which I think it would be, at least your pride should curb you from doing that, because you look like a chump, like promoting yourself in front of everybody. So I will star it or reply and just say, hey, thanks, man. Glad it was an encouragement or whatever. But that's, otherwise
gross. Next on the firing line, Denny.
Yeah, let another man praise you, not your own mouth. I mean, that's what the Bible says. And so from time to time, when I get something like this on Twitter, my normal practice is not to retweet it, but just to write back to the person and just say thank you, or I appreciate that, something along those lines. But I will say this, when, is this going to sound self-promotional? My book came out this last year. I was trying to figure out how to get the word out, and so I wrote to Justin. And I was thinking, and I asked him, I said, should I put the endorsements on my blog? And would this be a way to sort of get the word out about the book and so forth? And you didn't say that's sinful.
Yeah,
what I said. He doesn't remember what he said. But he didn't say that was sinful, and so he kind of just threw it back in my court. And at the end of the day, I thought, you know what? I'm just going to err on the side of not doing this, because we'll get the word out some other way. But I just did not feel right about that at the end of the day, putting somebody else's basically compliments out there. Now, the reason was, it's not because my motive honestly was not for anything except that I wanted people to read the book. I still want people to read the book because I believe in it. So, and this gets back to the last thing I'll say here. When it comes to blogging or writing, for me anyway, there's a sense of call behind it. It's kind of a Jeremiah 20 thing. My bones are on fire with this stuff. And so when I get up in the morning or at night and I'm writing, I'm just doing this because I want to. You know what I mean? And because I feel passionately about the Word of God and how it impacts this or that thing that I'm thinking about. And I'm thinking for most writers, if you don't feel that way about what you're doing, then you have to ask what your calling is, what your... To me, I think that's bound up with giftedness, is that sense of calling and passion about the issue, so that it won't be about yourself and it won't be about trying to fish for comments and all the rest. It'll always be about God's truth, which hopefully is at the center of everything.
Last one, Tim.
Yeah, there's one of the books that's we gave away is Facing Leviathan by Mark Sayers. And in there, he has a section on platform building. And here's a quote, and I know I'm not going to say it right, but he talks about you have to know the difference between where the message ends and you begin. And oftentimes the messenger becomes the message, and Twitter really becomes a place where that happens. And so while we think we're promoting the message, we end up actually supplanting that message ourselves when we practice that. So my case would be similar to what Joe and Justin said. I think it's very unwise to do it. Unfortunately, I've had to unfollow some friends because of the practice, because it just becomes too excessive. I don't mind maybe once or twice seeing that online, but when that becomes the narrative of a person online, it's hard to not think that he's really made himself the message and not the book or the blog.
Yeah, this might might be naive, but I wonder if we ought to focus and endeavor to become the kind of followers of Christ who so love other people and serve his cause that others would want to, when we produce resources or we write something that's helpful, help to share that with others because we become people who are trusted and reliable and faithful and creative and things like that. Maybe that's naive to think, but again, let another man praise you. I think that happens when you're the kind of person who lives and works with integrity and is a Christian brother or sister to others in a position to do that. I think that's ideally how it would work. I mean, if I see somebody, and I've unfollowed lots of people because of that same thing, when I see them doing that, it doesn't mean nearly as much as when other people come along and say, guys, you really want to see this. This is great. I've read it. Or share this article. It's a great article. I mean, and I love to do that for my friends. When they write something, whether it's a blog article or they do an interview or they write a book, I love to be able to do that for them.
So yeah, I think two takeaways here. One, what Colin just said of be generous with others, be more excited. I mean, it's good and it's legitimate. If you're not excited about something that you've produced, that's a problem. But be as excited about what others are doing and retweet them more than you would, you know, highlight your own resources. But secondly, here's one practical strategy that I try to do. Tie anything that I link to content. So I did this book with Andreas Kostenberger, The Final Days of Jesus, and starting this Sunday, I think it's Palm Sunday, going to Easter Sunday, on my blog will be a video each day of the week, like 3 minutes, with various New Testament scholars talking about what happened each day. So at some level, that to some people will look like I'm promoting every day this week that book. But my motivation behind it is, even if you don't buy the book, at least you're getting some good content. You really don't have to pay anything. You're getting this free resource. You're getting some good stuff. So I think that's one way where we can highlight something we've written, as long as it's content that can actually serve people. I think that's different than always just saying, FYI, I've got a new book out. That doesn't necessarily serve anybody. I mean, they can go out and they can get the book, but if you can provide free content, I think that's a way to make your stuff known and a way to serve people, even if they never put down any money to buy a resource that you've produced. At least they're getting it for free and being helped by it. So that's one way I try to.
Last question. Thank you, Justin. Brief answers from everybody. What is the most important thing you did, taking into account all the positive views of what it means to build a platform for the sake of the gospel? What's the most important thing you've done to build that platform in a constructive way that maybe some people out here could apply? Justin? I mean, examples here would just be like publishing regularly or connecting with other people. What would it be?
Yeah, I think for me, starting out, the fact that I did it almost every day and people didn't have Twitter and Facebook, so they would come to my blog. And if I didn't have anything for 3 days, I think people get bored and move on. So trying to just provide regular content. I tell people now, it doesn't mean you have to publish 3 times a day, even if you just do it twice a week, but that consistency, I don't think it's good. Yeah, I don't think it's good to do 5 days in a row and then take 2 weeks off, but even if you just do, you know, if you commit to blogging twice a week, I think that's not problematic anymore because of Twitter and Facebook, where in the older iteration of the medium, it would have been a little bit more difficult.
Good point. Trevin?
I think for me, I saw that my platform was starting to grow on the blog, was getting an audience or whatnot, was beginning to link daily so that I could use that platform to push other people. There are other good things I was finding helpful, or books, deals, and interviews with other people. Just starting to realize I'm really not the most interesting person on this blog. There are awesome resources to point people out to all the time, and so I realize people come to the blog constantly, will skip over whatever I wrote that day and will go right either to the interview with the author that I've done or go right to the link list and are interested in just seeing what I might have curated for people. For me, I think that's been the most helpful thing in stewarding the blog.
Go ahead, Joe.
Two things. One would be knowing your focus, like your emphasis, narrowing down exactly what you're writing about. So in my case, it was just figuring out like what will be the parameters in which I write. And then secondly, really knowing your perspective. And like, you know, like, so coming from a Reformed Baptist perspective and emphasizing experiential theology. So, but knowing, so people will figure out like, this is what this blog is about. I know if I'm going to go there. If you're a hate blogger, you know, people are going to be drawn to that because they know they're going to get the juicy stuff that they want. But it works in positive ways as well. So focus and perspective.
Great. Go ahead, Denny.
Pictures. If you put pictures on there, that
mostly
that really
of
helps.
Cats.
Yeah, cats. That's correct.
Cats and babies.
I kid you not, one time Tom Schreiner told me that he really likes my blog because I have pictures. He's told me actually more than once. The frequency thing I think is important, so I would reiterate that. But you know what? I just blog on the stuff I care about. And so in the fall on Saturdays, sometimes it's football. Sometimes I'm posting bad lip reading from the NFL. And then sometimes I'm talking about false teachers. In other words, for me, my blog is kind of the whole range of my experience. And I don't know if everybody likes it, but a lot of people have come to me and said they appreciate that they appreciate the range that's on there.
So you do what you like. Do what you're interested in. Yeah. Go ahead.
When I was a student here at Southern, I blogged a lot on what I was learning at school, a lot of the books I was reading. Now my life has changed to where I'm doing a lot more ministry and unfortunately not able to read as much as I'd like when I was a seminary student. But I guess about 3 years ago, I had a shift in my life where I decided I wanted to write about where I was living. And I wanted to be a practitioner, not just talk in theory. And a verse that really convicted me about that was when Paul says in Romans 15:18, he says, "I will not venture to speak of anything except what Christ has accomplished through me." And some people think that is an arrogant thing, but I don't think it's arrogant at all. I think Paul is saying, I want to speak where I'm living. And I want to share with other people where God has been working in my life. And so I don't blog as often. I think my last blog post besides Band of Bloggers was a month ago. And it's not because I don't have things I want to write about. I'm trying to live my life before my wife and kids and before our church. And when I have opportunity to share the fruits of that to my community, I want to. And what in my experience has been, the most widely read things that I've ever written are nothing that are really trendy or relevant. They're things that God has worked in my life that seem to be beneficial to other people as well, and they've been blessed by that. So that's been a big change for me, is just to let your real life drive your blog and speak out of the fruit of that.
And I would say your blog is less juicy than it used to be, with a lot of insider stuff about the Southern Baptist Convention, and yet part of why it's not as juicy anymore is because God's done wonderful things, both convention-wide as well as in your own life. So I would definitely say your blog is more, in a lot of ways, inspirational to me and just encouraging me to want to live that out. Last thing that I would add is that to most important thing that I think I've done for my work is to stay a learner, to continue to read. I feel like if I'm only reading blogs and Twitter, then the best that I can offer on my platform is a triangulation or collection of other people's 140-character letter thoughts. And that's not much to offer. So that's why I want to get into the scriptures, first of all, and then into the older works and into some other types of things that other people aren't necessarily thinking about. So I hope you especially appreciated that last part. I thought that was especially instructive. Again, I think we have the giveaway now we have to do. But first, just again, please join me in thanking the panel.